we get things underway this afternoon by welcoming back to the show our friend from Deadspin, the lovely and talented David Roth. Hello there, David.
Hi, Rich. How are you?
Well, I'm doing well. Now, you're younger than me, but yeah, we have a lot in common, I think, in the way we view the world. So, like me, you've probably been in a bunch of bar fights in your life.
I have. I actually was in one just when Carrie called, so I had to excuse myself. But I'm going to go back in there and throw a pint glass at a stranger in a few minutes.
Because that's what us men do, right?
Yeah. What else are you going to do? What are you going to do in a bar other than get in a big fight like a normal guy? I would say this, that, and I talked to Drew about this on our podcast this week. I spent way more time in bars in my life than is healthy or advisable. Like, you know, not get too dark on it. Like, I've never even seen a bar fight. And I don't think I've been doing it wrong.
No, you know, I'm with you on that. And I, for various reasons, have spent, yeah, probably an inappropriate amount of time.
I don't want to get, like, sidetracked where we're both, you know, honoring each other's truth here. Let's just say that we like wet floors.
Yes, exactly. And I've seen people get loud, but usually by themselves, and you know, people look the other way. I've seen people get into the point of shouting at somebody in a parking lot somewhere, but I don't know that I've ever actually witnessed a bar fight. But then again, I don't go to bars frequented by guys wearing their sweaters tied around their waist like some people do.
It is kind of remarkable that is, of the many, many disheartening lessons of the broader Brett Kavanaugh experience, it's somehow that like the guys with the popped collars on their polo shirts are the ones that really want to throw down.
I picture you one punch and then running, and then they even if they don't make contact, they're telling the bros that, yeah, I was in a bar fight, yeah.
Throwing a punch and then being like, you'll hear from my attorney. And then it's like off. Somehow there's like a boat waiting for them outside and they just zoom off on that.
And their attorneys running right behind them out the door. That's the best part. Well, while we're on the subject of America 2018, every week it feels like we've hit a new low, but can it possibly go lower than what we saw this week? And not from the president, because we've come to accept and embrace that, but from the good people of Mississippi cheering him as he mocks a victim of sexual abuse.
Man, that was... I wrote something about that, and it has. It may not run. Like, I think it was mostly a self-care exercise. I watched that video a lot, and I guess you can't really be, like you said, surprised by any of this stuff anymore. But maybe it's good that it's still startling to see stuff like that. You know, that it's not just what we accept as normal now that people act that way. But man, I mean. This was always going to be a thing that Trump was going to do because it's just how he is. This is the sort of thing that he does when he sees somebody that he thinks he can get away with pushing around. He'll push him around. But the idea that that's like entertainment to people, and I think that that's a large part of the appeal that Trump has to people, is that, you know, he's funny and like sort of an outsized personality or whatever. And if you don't think of politics as being a thing that actually impacts your life for various reasons, then like there's no reason not to vote for the funniest guy. But the way in which he gets those laughs is really kind of, it does make you think a little bit about who he's laughing at, what he's doing, and why.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I guess it's good that we're not completely numb to it just yet. Now, speaking of the podcast, the new Deadcast is out, and I have not listened to it yet, but I must, as I always do. But especially since you claim that you do an impression of Trump explaining the opening sequence of the classic film Barbed Wire.
To a child. Well, I can explain that, not in a way that justifies my decision. I apologize to everyone that just had to hear you say that. It is true. I do it. Every week we deal with a bunch of reader questions, and we do traditionally one Trump question per week. This week's question was, has Trump ever been alone with his grandchildren? And... for Drew and I, that was pretty much a layup. He absolutely has not been alone with any of his grandchildren in an unsupervised setting. And I thought that one of the ways in which, like, Papa Donald babysitting for, you know, his children on a day when they wanted to have a date night, for instance, or fly around in a helicopter and talk about poor people, whatever it is they do, I don't know what an Ivanka Jared date night is. Just the idea of Donald putting a child down for a nap led me in that direction. Maybe it's my fault for thinking about Pamela Anderson's barbed wire in 2018, but I think he should share some of the blame.
I don't know who it was yesterday, but it was a brilliant tweet about his presidential alert that went out in the afternoon, and somebody tweeted, well, good for Tiffany Trump. It's the first time she's gotten a text from her dad.
Oh, yes, brutal. That was the hard times. That one was passed around by everybody. I appreciate that this is whatever my idiot brand is on the internet, that anytime someone is mean about Trump in a way that they find funny, people are like, hey, I want to make sure you saw this. Like, you seem to like to be unhappy. Like, here, which I, you know, whatever. You can't say I didn't build that brand myself, but I did.
And I want to ask you about this, too, because I feel, I know I live in an echo chamber. I've chosen to do that. But then again, I do travel outside that bubble once in a while. I work in public education. I see, you know, the real human beings of the world. And yet, everybody seems to agree on all the basic facts that I encounter in my life. Where are all these people we see at the rallies? Do they go into hiding?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like this is the part, then again, that I tried to wrestle with in this possibly unpublishable blog post that I wrote earlier today, is that, you know, I grew up around people that voted for Trump. And you know, a lot of my, I don't think I have any friends that did, but a lot of my friends' parents sure did. And it doesn't, you know, it just mostly complicates the experiences of dealing with them in the sense that you know that they can be these two things at once. They are moment to moment, you know, in their engagements with other people, they're kind, they're good people, they're good grandparents, they were good parents to their kids. And yet they either believe things that I don't know how they believe, or they don't care about other people in the way that I've seen them care about their family or me, you know, and that is really a lot to hold in mind. I mean, I guess it's just, again, I think the nicest explanation would just be that people are in this to be entertained because they don't think that politics is real, that it's just sort of this elaborate criminal enterprise that happens someplace that they don't visit. And then the rest of it is just, you know, the stuff that makes them feel the most feelings. I just don't understand it's certainly the idea of creating this alternate information ecosystem in which you're never wrong and everything is exactly the way that you want it to be. I can sort of see the appeal of it, but it also seems like it would get claustrophobic really fast, right?
Yeah. It seems to me, too, that there's a little bit, because it's been set up as this us versus them, that they enjoy the other, whoever that is defined as by Trump.
Yeah.
They enjoy seeing the other lose and then be mocked for their losing.
I think that's absolutely right. And I think that it seems like, especially, again, I mean, when you're dealing with that abstracted view of how this all works and what it all means, then, yeah, I mean, it's Yankees and Red Sox, you know? Like, the difficult part of that is just knowing that it's not just about, like, you know, beating your enemies at something. Like, there are human costs to all of this. Like, immediate costs in terms of people's lives, but then also, you know, all of this rolls over. The thing that, you know, makes me sad when I'm sad about this stuff is just seeing how much more like Trump everything sort of seems every day. You know, and I don't think that's not the truth in terms of, you know, my friends haven't changed, my family hasn't, but the broader vibe of the world just has that sort of combative stupidity to it.
We're talking with David Roth of Deadspin. Well, let's move to sports, the escape from the world, right?
Yeah.
And your podcast is entitled The Hater's Guide to the MLB Playoffs. So what's wrong with postseason baseball? How have they screwed that up for us?
I will say that I had a hard time not being excited about it because, buddy, I need it right now a lot. And also, I'm excited about the teams that are in there for the most part. I mean, I would have loved to have seen the Athletics beat the Yankees just, you know, because I like it when strange things happen in sports, but I can deal with it. It mostly is just like a format that Drew sort of invented, and the idea is basically to try to find the thing that's the most loathsome about every team that's left, and sometimes that's easier than others. But, you know, if you dig enough, you can still find something to be, you know, irritated about. And Justin Turner, that's one of the great gifts of consciousness. You always find something to be upset about. But I am excited about it. I think so far already, it's been pretty fun to watch.
How about your Mets? Is it strictly ownership, the commissioner? Who's to blame for that mess?
Oh, boy. You want to just do another 40 minutes on this? Are you okay with that? I don't know if you have any other guests. Me bump Mark Leibovich so I can complain about Jeff Wilpon?
Yes, absolutely.
That book's fantastic, by the way.
Yes, it is. It's great.
I'm supposed to review it for the Baffler. I'm behind on that. But the with the Mets, I think it's bad owners that have a very active hand in the day-to-day management of the team in terms of, you know, how they screw up individual transactions, but then also in terms of how they handle injuries and how they handle player development. But it's all this sort of top-down culture that's created by these two meddling dinosaurs from Long Island. The broader issue there, though, I mean, in terms of bringing the commissioner into it, and this is something that I wrote about in a few months ago, I think is a sort of wish-casting exercise. I think that they are bad enough in their stewardship of a franchise that's important to baseball's broader goals, just in the sense that it's the National League team that plays in New York. I think that they are bad enough that there is some argument to be made for something similar to what Bud Selig did with Frank McCourt, which is basically when an owner gets so embarrassing that it is screwing up the competitive curve in the league and also, you know, splashing out shameful stuff in the tabloids all the time, that then maybe there is a case for, making that person sell. With McCourt, it was different because it was so lurid. We had this crazy public divorce and basically took $175 million out of the team to finance this public divorce. You know, which is, say this much for the Wilpons, as far as I know, they're happily married. But they really have done a lousy job with this team to the point where I think it's, you know, it's hard for me or anyone more optimistic than me to imagine a way in which things change unless they're gone.
Did you get a chance to see any of LeBron in his Laker sort of debut the other night?
It's so weird to watch. I saw highlights. I'm still in the phase of the NBA preseason where I see photos of players in uniforms that I'm not expecting them to be wearing, and my mind is blown and I have to go lie down. There's some photos of Tony Parker in a Charlotte Hornets uniform that, like, just thinking about them is upsetting to me. It looks so wrong. It looks like a weird, like a transaction thing in a video game, but somebody had worked that trade out. LeBron, I mean, I feel like LeBron has managed this whole thing really well. I don't know that team's, like, going to be any good at all, but it seems like he's having fun, and once I get used to him wearing that uniform and having his name on the back of it, I imagine that I'll be able to enjoy it as well. I saw one on the street the other day, a guy wearing a LeBron Lakers jersey, and I wanted to just ask him a few questions.
I must have been sleepy when I saw the highlights, because my first reaction was, he left the Heat?
Yeah. It is weird, but I feel like I just got used to that. And then, you know, him going back to the Cavs, I was like, oh, all right, cool. And now this one where it's him, and then they surrounded him with all these weirdos, you know, the idea of, like, it's one thing for him to be on the Lakers. It's another thing for him to be, like, high-fiving Rajon Rondo
and
Stevenson after a three-point play. Like, I don't know that it's going to happen for me this year that I'm going to get used to it.
David Roth of Deadspin, check out the Deadcast as well. David, always great to talk with you here. We appreciate it, and most of all, appreciate you being an island of sanity in troubled times out there in the interwebs.
Man, I appreciate it. I feel the same way about you all.
Thank you, David. We'll talk with you soon.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye now. David Roth here on Downtown, just getting us started on a Thursday afternoon.